Okay, welcome to episode number 20 of the Hot Hot Hoops Weekly Podcast. I am your fearless host, Ernest EJ Christian, alongside, of course, my fearless co-host, Dave Ramil. Dave, what's going on?
Not much. I'm not sure if we can call it weekly after the long hiatus we've taken.
Hey, listen. We're trying to do something positive here, man. I mean, no more. People missed us, obviously, and we're back. We're back. It's been, what, 9 months, 8 months? I don't know. July was the last show we did, actually. I think the last show we did is when we signed Goran.
Oh, well, I mean, that was certainly big news, and a lot has happened since then. So, you know, they're in an exciting new phase for the team. So I guess that's what brought us about here. You know, we're coming back together, just like LeBron in the news. Maybe there's a reunion in place here in Miami.
Stop. You know, I hate not saying you because you're not this guy. So I'm not gonna say you, but I hate obvious people. I hate people who are so obvious. Oh, LeBron made a subtweet about regretting something. Oh, maybe misses Miami. Shut up. This is too easy. I mean, maybe it is, but I don't care. You know, it's just like enough already. Move on. It's been a year and a half now. Let's go.
I'm just egging you on. I know your buttons, so I'm just pressing those early on here in the show.
Episode 20. Any famous Heat players? 120. John Sunvold, number 20.
Wow. I don't know. I can't think of anybody else. Number 20. Huh? That's an interesting number there.
Billy Owens is 30, so that doesn't count. No.
No, it doesn't.
I know. Next episode we have Kevin Edwards.
Isn't Hassan 21?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Hopefully. I think that that might be a little bit more prevalent for people.
Relevant. Oh, for Sean Leonard, maybe. I don't know. Even that one. Yeah. But it's a lot of good things happening in Miami these days. I mean, and it's funny to say that because, you know, with the news of Chris Bosh again, same time, different year. Which, by the way, the blood clots aren't even confirmed yet. I mean, no one's confirmed it yet. Right. Not him, not the Heat, no one. We're assuming that's what it is, but no one has actually said that publicly, officially. That is the issue. But he hasn't placed the All-Star break due to a calf injury, which many believe is related to blood clots. But anyway, I'm assuming that you thought this, and I know me, to a lesser extent, definitely thought that spelled doom and gloom because, yeah, no Chris Bosh, who was having a fantastic year, too, by the way, this season. And you remember the Heat came into the All-Star break stumbling a little bit at the end. So he thought it was doom and gloom, but instead, doom and gloom has now turned to pace and space. And all of a sudden, you see a new Heat team since the All-Star break, and all of a sudden, things have looked pretty good. They're now number four in the Eastern Conference. And I think many would believe this could be a very dangerous team moving forward. They also added, very importantly, Joe Johnson, seven-time All-Star. Former Brooklyn Net now, who was bought out of his contract last weekend, and then he signed with the Heat, which is, I think, for a lot of people fascinating because of the fact that he had better options. He had OKC, who could use him, who would have been a starter also in OKC, as well as the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were obviously the odds-on favorite to win the Eastern Conference, and definitely, I mean, maybe the biggest challenge, maybe second biggest challenge to the Golden State Warriors out west, but he chose the Miami Heat. Let me ask you a question. How shocked were you about that one?
I was pretty surprised. I mean, I thought that there was certainly some consideration there. If you'd asked me at the beginning of the season, not knowing whether or not he'd had any communications with the front office or not, I mean, we'd had even heard some noise that maybe he wasn't planning on getting a buyout at all, that he was just going to stick it out with Brooklyn, and he decided to go for the buyout, and it worked out well. You know, it sounds like a good fit. You know, Pat Riley's always loved veterans. He's a guy who's obviously proven over the course of his career. Probably wouldn't cost a lot of money. So that's been the modus operandi for over a decade, you know, kind of plugging those holes with not too expensive veterans that can come in and contribute. It worked during the Big Three era, it worked during the Shaq era. So it's clearly something that has been a process here in Miami for a good long time. It seemed to make sense on paper, but again, you think most veterans, when they get bought out like that, are looking for a better opportunity at winning a title because that's the last thing that they need to add to their resume. You know, a guy like Shane Battier or in Ray Allen's case who wants to add another ring, et cetera, you know, Rashard Lewis, et cetera. Those kinds of players, they want to add a ring to their resume. Maybe for Joe Johnson, that's not necessarily the most important thing. And a lot of fans want to criticize him on that decision, but, you know, he chose a place where he had some friends on the team already. He was going to continue to play at a high level. He has been since he joined the team. He was going to get more playing time than he would have done either in Oklahoma City or in Cleveland. He wasn't going to be necessarily part of a machine that was going to move forward looking for a title. And he's already said that he wants to finish his career here in Miami, and that includes maybe even re-signing over the summer. So as far as I'm concerned, I think it was a good personal decision for him, and it's worked out very well for Miami as well.
And given the Eastern Conference, too. Given the Eastern Conference this year, and which has improved, by the way. We see, sure, you know, there's more teams winning records now than have been in a long time at this point in the year. You know, but there's no separation. It's Cleveland, and if you want to put Toronto, I still am skeptical of Toronto because I think they're this year's version of the Atlanta Hawks that they were last year. I still think the East is still to be had. I think I'm not saying that Miami is going to beat Cleveland. I think Cleveland's still the best team in the East because they have the best, you know, arguably best player in basketball still in LeBron James. But what I will say is this, is that the Heat might have the best chance to separate themselves from everybody else because of the veteran roster, veteran laden. You know, you still have Dwayne Wade playing great basketball. And by the way, who's changed the narrative this year, you know, via Pat Riley. You know, he's only missed, what, 3 games this year? I mean, right. Who would have thought that? I mean, and he's played very well in the majority of those games. So Joe Johnson, I think, looked at it as a balancing act. Well, Miami may not necessarily be a title favorite, but they could also be in the conversation with me being there, and I can get paid again, and I can increase my value again, because Joe Johnson is only 34 years old, and he can get another decent contract for another 2-3 years. I can see this guy making about anywhere from like 10 million to 12 million a year still because of, you know, he's still a quality player. You're seeing that now. So that being said, I think that's what went to his head when he decided to come to Miami.
Now, I mean, with the Chris Bosh news still up in the air, if he rejoins the team this season and is able to continue playing at a high level, this team's clearly a title contender in your opinion, wouldn't you say?
With Chris Bosh, without Chris Bosh?
With Chris Bosh.
Absolutely. Because right now you're looking at a situation where look what's happening with the philosophy now, and we'll get to that in a second, in terms of the production of everybody else. The guys who we came to the year, the first half of the year, that we were saying, oh, man, this product, like Goran Dragic and Luol Deng, what are they doing? That's flipped 180 now. Now, I mean, Deng, you know, Hassan was so great on Tuesday, you forgot Deng scored 20 points again.
Right.
So he's had, like, what, 3 double-doubles since the All-Star break?
Yeah, very
Goran,
solid.
Yeah, Goran has 17-11 on Tuesday. You know, that's what we were hoping to see coming to the year, was that balancing act. And I made this point also, too, you know, most of the year, and definitely during the All-Star break, was the fact that less of Wade is better for Miami. Because you want Wade to be the closer. You want Wade to come in there and the last 5 minutes of games, maybe in periods where he needs to be the guy. But the idea is that if Miami wants to continue being a team that can contend in the East to beat Cleveland, it has to be a balancing act. And we're seeing that now, finally.
Absolutely. I mean, their outing on Tuesday versus the Bulls, 129 points, 67.5% shooting. That was unbelievable.
Team record.
Yeah. Joe Johnson was a big part of that as well. 27 points. 10 of 13 shooting, 2 of 3 from three-point range. And the team went 6 of 12 overall from three-point range. That's not the team that we saw during big stretches of the season here where they just couldn't hit a three-point shot. Even you go back to Sunday's game against the Knicks, they didn't shoot particularly well. So I'm not ready to say that this is a brand-new team or anything like that, but I will support your statement that they are looking much better. They're certainly much more capable of they were as they were in the past, and I think we're starting to see a better version of this team. And I think some of the pieces are just starting to mesh, and I think Spoelstra's done a very good job of balancing the veterans of the team with the young players. Josh Richardson has been a big part of that as well. Goran Dragic is fitting in a lot better than he did earlier in the season. I think that's a good sign for Miami moving forward.
Absolutely. Speaking of Chris Bosh, as you said, you know, calf injury, of course. I mean, we keep hearing stories that, you know, he wants to try to come back and play. He's not sure if the blood thinners, if you can play with blood thinners. A lot of people recommend that, from what I understand, doctors recommend that they don't, you don't do any physical work if you want blood thinners. And I think that's a lot of the holdup with Bosh in terms of making the official decision, because, you know, I think what you're seeing is that Bosh wants to be part of this team. I think Bosh sees the opportunity here, especially now with Joe Johnson on the roster, that, hey, we can definitely, hey, if Cleveland has their issues now, which we're seeing, yeah, although I think they will clear it up, because I just think that LeBron is that good, and I think they'll figure it out. But if this lingers into April, probably May, Miami could be the next team in the Eastern Conference to leapfrog, you know, Cleveland.
I mean, I think you're doing Toronto a disservice, to be honest with you. I think they're actually a lot better than you think.
You know what it is with Toronto? It's not like I don't believe in them. It's just that I did this act with them 2 years ago and last year. So to me, it's like, okay, if you're going to do it, I'm going to respect you in hindsight, not beforehand. I'm not going to buy stock to you right now and then fail me again for the third time in a row.
But I've heard the argument made before, and it makes sense. You know, if you look at a team like Golden State, clearly they're an aberration that they don't necessarily have championship experience. But even they had to go through a process of building their way up and up and up. You know, you make headway each season, and you're building towards something. You know, it was different in the Big Three era here in Miami because you already had a franchise and specific players that had already gone on to compete for championships, so they knew what that process was like. So if you look at Toronto, you could say that year by year, they're getting better, and they're improving on the things that they needed to. They couldn't come up in clutch moments last year. Now they're finally getting to that point where you see them closing out games. They had a big win over Cleveland recently. Kyle Lowry is playing at an incredibly high level. So I think you look at that roster, defensively, they're very solid. Look, they still have holes in that roster, and they're still the second-best team and playing, you know, arguably as good as any team in the league other than Golden State Warriors. You know, you discount what's happening in San Antonio just because they've been so good for so long. But in the East, at least, Toronto's been the better team, I think, overall.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I won't even dispute that. It's when we get to April and May, because everything changes then. Because
sure.
You know what it is with Miami? And you might agree with this also. Miami kind of reminds me of two teams in recent history. They remind me of the 2010 Celtics, who everybody thought was old and washed up and, you know, done. And then the Celtics turned on in the end. I mean, they won, what, only 47 games that year? So it didn't look that impressive on paper. But then once you saw them play, like, oh, never mind, veterans. And the Nets a couple years ago, too. The same Nets team that beat Toronto 2 years ago. With, you know, that wasn't impressive throughout the season. They won 44 games, got into sixth seed or whatever in the East, and then they figured it out. They figured it out in the playoffs. They lost to Miami in the second round, but it was competitive. Oh. But my point is, you know, that's what Miami reminds me of, a team that, and I said this before the year started, I never saw this Heat team as a 50-plus win team. I saw this team as a 47, 45 win team, somewhere in that ballpark that would figure it out. They would struggle in points of the year, but then figure out the end of the year, and then playoffs, that can be dangerous 4 or 5 seed, depending on the matchups, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a realistic possibility. And I hear what you're saying about Toronto. They lack that kind of championship experience. I don't think they have anybody on that roster who's even made it to the finals. So, I mean, there's definitely some lack of experience on that end. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they keep building to that. So, as far as Miami's concerned, look, Chris Bosh changes everything. If he can find a way to come back, and you know, we still don't know what's going on. To your point earlier, you know, I saw the latest report. It's an undisclosed illness. I guess that's what they're officially terming it. Right. There's a good chance that it's blood clots, and as a result, you know, I think retirement is a very real possibility. Yeah. I know a lot of Heat fans don't want to hear that, but I think that's very possible. And you know what? As far as I'm concerned, he's been such a great player, but also a great person that I support that decision. I understand that there'll be a large hole vacated by his absence, but at the same time, you know, he's a family man, and he has to do what he has to do in order to protect himself and be there for his family. That's more important than anything that happens on the hardwood floor, as much as we love basketball. But having said that all, I think we'd all love to see him back on the floor. I think we'd love to see him healthy and be able to contribute in some way, and hopefully that'll be the case. We haven't heard anything up to this point, so I'm not sure what the delay is. You know, hopefully something is coming soon, and hopefully it'll be good news.
He seems like a guy that, while he loves basketball, he doesn't need it. In other words, it's like Kobe and no, Jordan, that it's hard absolutely. To let go. He's like, you know what? I'm good. I have my family. I'm brewing beers now. I have the Thai business. I have 3 kids, twins on the way. I have a beautiful wife, a whole 9. I don't need it. I love to play basketball. I love to continue his career. I mean, it pays great, obviously, and I'm a top tier player in the league. But if I can't, at the risk of my health, nah, I'll go ahead and step away. And by the way, if he retires today, he's a Hall of Famer first ballot. Period. In discussion.
Well, somebody will argue that for sure, but I agree with you 100% on that note. And I also agree with you that he is probably the best equipped player, or one of the better equipped players in the league, to just kind of hang it up and say, you know what, I've got plenty of things that keep me occupied and interested. He doesn't seem like he's 100% obsessed with basketball or winning or beating people or crushing their souls the way Kobe does. You know, that's not, that's never been what defines him. He's a basketball player who just loves to do other things as well. And I think he'll move, he'll transition very easily into retirement. He'll be a hell of a great broadcaster. I think he'd be great covering teams.
Yeah.
A very nuanced perspective, and he's very, you know, well spoken. I think he'd be awesome as a broadcaster.
Well, like I said, prayers to Bosch and the rest of the family. Obviously, I mean, for the undisclosed injury. Like I said, we hear the rumors of blood clots, but until they make it official, I'm gonna respect that undisclosed injury. But we'll see what happens there. But I tell you what, who's really made taking advantage of this whole Bosch thing, Bosch absence, is our guy here, Hassan Whiteside. Now, we wrote a piece a couple weeks ago. You and I did a combo piece, which we tend to do a lot, on whether, and this is when the suspension or the ejection happened during that San Antonio game a few weeks back of Whiteside for the elbow, and we were discussing the fact that, okay, well, because at that point there were a lot of rumors around that between that day we wrote the piece and then the trade deadline, that would Miami actually consider trading him away? Do they even want to consider keeping him in the future in the whole nine? And we were obviously on both sides of the fence. But I got to tell you, man, these last – I know the sample's small. It's, what, six games? Some of that.
Seven games.
But, wow.
You know, I think the – I'm loath to call that one suspension a wake-up. And you're right. I'm sorry. It is six games because he missed that first game after the All-Star break due to the suspension. But
right.
You know, I'm like I said, I don't know that it's necessarily a wake up call, but I think he's adjusted very well, better than I would have expected. And I think part of that is, you know, Eric Spoelstra being honest and open with him, and the veterans of the team telling him specifically that they need him in order to be productive, in order to be successful this season. He's a big part of that, and he's flourished off the bench. And I think that's an interesting conundrum there, because you wonder whether or not he would be as productive if he was starting, but he's really taking advantage of the fact that he's coming in against a second unit center and being able to put up the big numbers. And we've seen in the past that maybe Hassan Whiteside is more interested in building statistics rather than building success. But in this case, you can have your cake and eat it too, because I think he's been a very good productive player, and at the same time, he's also contributing to team wins. And that's really what all that matters. And he's made little changes. I think his pick and roll defense has improved. His screens have been much better.
Yep.
I won't go so far as to say great, but he's been a very good screen setter.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, you know, that's his free throw shooting has been phenomenal.
Yes. He's hit, I believe, don't quote me, but I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 of his last 22 free throws.
Yeah, I think they had said it was 95%, 90-95% or so. I mean, that's that's great.
I mean,
he's
out of the hacker category now. You can't no longer hack a Whiteside anymore because he will hit his free throws.
Right, right. And yeah, I mean, that was the biggest weakness, right, that he couldn't be on the floor in close games in the fourth quarter because he was going to be a detriment to the team. But that's no longer the case. And, you know, he's still contributing. As long as he's able to show a little bit on pick and rolls, I think he'll still contribute to being a better defender overall. He's going to get his blocks. He's been guarding the rim at a high level throughout his whole career, and he's continued that. And, you know, he's just being a great rebounder, great scorer in traffic. He's doing all the things that he did well, and he's just adding those little nuances there. Now, the passing still isn't there, but it hasn't needed to be, you know, not from him anyway, because between Dragic and Wade and even in an improved Justice Winslow and all the other guys, Joe Johnson, clearly all these guys can move the ball around. And you know, we mentioned it earlier, but Luol Deng, not necessarily his passing, but his cutting ability, the way he gets open now, it's led to some very productive games there. So we don't require as much from Whiteside in the passing end. He's been able to do his job. He's found his role, and he seems to be really enjoying it. And I think a lot of Heat fans, I think I am as well, are concerned that maybe it could all fall apart very quickly. But from what I've seen, he seems to be in a very contented place right now, much better place than he was earlier in the season. I think once the trade deadline passed, he kind of felt a little bit more assured that he was a big part of the team, at least in the next few months. Who knows if he'll be a long-term part of it over the summer when he's a free agent. But for now, he's definitely maximizing his role on there, and it's been great to see.
I feel like he wants to be here. I feel like he wants to be in Miami, though. I think he's happy in Miami.
What's not to love?
Well, yeah, of course. He said it right there. What's not to like? I think, you know, it may be a situation where if somebody offers him a little more money, he might take less to stay here. I really because of the situation, because he's in a winning situation. He's also, you know, in a city which he'll thrive in and has thrived in so far on the court, you know, when things are good, obviously. So I see that, you know, and not only that, I think what's been so impressive with Whiteside, and you touched on it a little while ago, the difference between Whiteside now in these six games versus the Whiteside before is that it's not just the points and the rebounds and stuff that he's doing. It's not just that. It's the little things. It's the little things that, you know, that we all criticize, that, you know, the me guy stuff. He's a bit of a me guy. Now you're seeing him do, it seems like now he's buying into the team concept. I was listening to Ethan Skolnick yesterday on his radio show, and one of the things that I didn't know until yesterday was the fact that Eric Spoelstra is the one who works with him more than anybody else, like one-on-one. Like, first off, Whiteside's in the weight room a lot. He actually stays at shoot-arounds past the time he needed to be. He works very hard off the court. And Spoelstra has taken the time to make this his project. Somebody, Skolnick has said too that this is the most he's spent on one player
since Wade.
Other than Wade, Wade doesn't count because Wade is obviously the franchise. But this is the most he's spent with one player at any point of his head coach reign.
Right,
and that's saying a lot. I mean, you're talking about, you know, reign that includes LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and other guys. You know, I mean, he spent time with Mario Chalmers, but this is a project that Spoelstra really wants to work out. He's taking the time, you know, and you know, Spo obviously relies a lot on his assistants, you know, Juwan Howard, of course, and Dave Fizdale and Chris Quinn, those guys. But yet, Spoelstra is the guy who's physically working with Whiteside more than anybody else. And I think there is some sort of, you know, I think Spoelstra really wants this to work with him long term, and that's why I think they're taking a lot of time with him. And look, I'm very encouraged what I've seen the last six games. I'm very encouraged. And like I said, not just the numbers, because the numbers, look, like we said this before in this podcast many times, numbers can lie. You know, numbers could lie. But the thing is that what I've seen and I think I'm impressed with is the fact that I'm seeing more of a team concept. There was a play on Saturday against Boston where he fell down on the court and Dwayne Wade came and picked him up. There's a little more camaraderie now I see with the veterans and with him now. And I think that's very encouraging for this team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much of the Spoelstra work, the one-on-one work that he's doing, is going to play a part in this summer's decision. Because I think he'll get offered a lot of money, more money than Miami will be able to offer him elsewhere. And I think that as much as we'd love to think that these players will take less money and take a hometown discount, et cetera, I think where you look at Whiteside and this particular phase of his career, that's not realistic. I mean, he's been the best value in the NBA over the last two seasons. And I don't think any player or most fans would begrudge him for going to Charlotte or Dallas or whomever is going to be willing to pay him $20 million a year. I think it's a logistical reality that we have to accept. Now, the difference could be whether or not he's willing to or able to get some kind of local endorsement deals or large national endorsement deals. That hasn't been the case right now. And I don't know that he's necessarily that kind of a player, but that could help sway the difference. You know, that could help be the make up the ground that he won't necessarily make contractually from Miami. And maybe that'll be what factors in there. Because up to this point, you know, Whiteside hasn't been really much of the face of the franchise, and he hasn't had to be. He's a complimentary player to Bosch or Wade. You know, they're still very much in the shadow of LeBron, even a year and a half later. So I wonder how much of that will be a factor this summer. It should be an interesting storyline for sure.
Speaking of credit, and speaking of Spoelstra, he's mentioned, I think he deserves way more credit for what he's been doing this year especially.
Yeah, you know, it hasn't been easy the last season and a half. And I know a lot of people want to discount what he did during the Big Three era, but we're seeing how hard that is in Cleveland. It's not enough just to have talent on your team. You know, even in Oklahoma City, a team that's been like that for a long time as far as having their homegrown talent and Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, it's not easy to have those guys on the roster. You know, there's always questions about whether or not they're going to work seamlessly together. In Cleveland, it's cost the job of David Blatt, who was hired at a point when they weren't expecting to compete for a title. You know, Spoelstra has been very, very good at handling changes to the lineup. He was good last season, and he's been great this year, too. You know, the loss of Chris Bosh probably would have ruined any team as far as their
last chemistry. Year.
Yeah. And you look at the chemistry, the way it's held together, you look at the number of pieces he's worked in and out. It's not like last year where we had, I think, 32 different starting lineups, but it's been pretty stark. I mean, there have been, I know I want to say about 15, maybe a little bit more as far as the total number of starting lineups this year. I mean, that goes to speak to the number of injuries he's had to deal with, the new players that have come in and out of the lineup. You know, he's had to adjust, and he's done a great job of that. He's getting some players who do things differently than they have over the course of their career. Luol Deng at the power forward position. I know that's out of necessity, but boy, has that worked out well for Lou and for the Heat.
Yeah. And you know what's funny, though? This is where it goes to Goran, too. And Goran, you know, obviously changing the narrative himself after the All-Star break. They both want to run.
Right.
And they're doing it. And Deng fits today's NBA's prototypical four now. He does. He's a fairly – he's 6'8", right? 6'8". What, 230, 240 maybe?
Yeah, he can play the four.
He does a good job with that. Yeah, I mean, it fits. And I think I'm not going to say I'm happy the Bosch thing happened, but sometimes you fall into that kind of like, you know, oh, wow, you fell into this whole pot of gold out of nowhere, and it's worked out.
Well, I mean, that's just the reality in the league. I mean, look what happened in Golden State last year. Without David Lee going down, they don't introduce, you know, Draymond Green into the starting lineup. They don't become the dangerous, deadly team that they are today. So, I mean, injuries happen, and, you know, things are forced by necessity. And
that's
case,
coaching. That's coaching, though. And some, right. I'm sorry. Some of these idiot Heat fans on the Heat Twitter, hashtag right. Heat Twitter. I mean, look, I know you guys are fans, and I'm sure the Heat appreciate you. Hell, we appreciate you, you know. For supporting the team and obviously, you know, supporting what we do here. But at the same time, man, come on. Some of y'all guys talk like you actually know basketball and you really don't. Let's stop. Because, I mean, seriously. I mean, this turnaround, honestly, you can sit there and say Whiteside is playing well. You can sit there and say Gore. The reason that he have turned this season around is because of Spoelstra. Period.
I think the biggest criticism, at least from Heat Twitter and others, has been that he's stubborn. I think that's the label that they use most often.
And which
I think
coach
that
isn't? I mean,
it comes into play when maybe he's kept a guy in the game for too long, or maybe he isn't making the right substitution. But, you know, he's got a better feel for his team than any of us do. So you have to kind of accept what he's doing there. And he's been more flexible in every other area of the game. So if he's not willing to make those in-game substitutions at a pace that satisfies your most irrational Heat fan, the fact that he's able to get Hassan Whiteside, a notoriously bad head case, to come off the bench and love that role, the fact that he's been able to play with the different lineups, get the most out of the players that he has, that speaks to the exact opposite. There's a flexibility there, an ability to improvise that is amongst one of the best qualities of the best coaches in the league, and I think Spoelstra certainly has demonstrated that over the course of his career.
I have a question for you here.
Sure.
I know Luol Deng's obviously his deal expires after the end of the season. Given what's going on with Chris Bosh and what may happen, I mean, I don't want to speculate that he might retire or he won't, whatever, but given Deng's success recently, and what's happened here, and of course, you know, this whole small ball four thing. Isn't it a bit of a priority now for Miami maybe to consider keeping Deng another year or two, if necessary?
Yes, but at the same time, I think you look at the fact that, it also depends. Let's say the biggest question mark clearly is Chris Bosh. If he's off the team and he's no longer able to play, then you've got to look at how you can build this team for the long run. And that means adding younger players to the mix. Wade's going to retire. Whiteside, if you can re-sign him, then clearly he becomes a focal point for the front office. But you need to bring somebody else in there who can help space the floor. I've heard the name Chandler Parsons being tossed around. Others out there. Clearly, Kevin Durant is the biggest priority there. Well, you know, it's a possibility. You discount it 100%. You don't think it's possible at all?
I'll give a 3% chance he even considers coming to Miami. I think he stays in OKC another year.
Sure, that's where he makes the most money. But, I mean, things are not going well there. And, you know, they're not able to win. And again, a lot of fans look at winning as being the ultimate goal. And a lot of players say that because I think it's been kind of brainwashed that the most important pursuit is a ring, a title, whatever. But there have been plenty of players that are historically great that haven't won a title. And it's not necessarily dog them. You know, not everybody's going to be Bill Russell. Not everybody's going to be Michael Jordan. Hell, John Sally and Robert Horry have more rings than, you know, Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, Charles Barkley, and John Stockton put together, and no one's going to claim that they're better players. So, you know, the pursuit of a ring, the getting a championship, isn't necessarily going to be what is the end-all, be-all hallmark for your career. So you know, Kevin Durant might choose to be in a place where he feels most comfortable. He likes Billy Donovan. He likes Westbrook. I think everything's going to be fine there. So maybe he chooses to go to, you know, to remain rather in Oklahoma City. Now he could go to Golden State. That's certainly an option. But if he's going to look to leave Oklahoma City, I think Miami is certainly a dark horse candidate. I would put them at third. And I think a lot of reporters I've seen have them as third as well. I think Golden State is clearly number
Miami
two.
Miami third on Durant's wish list, possibly?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think Washington is realistic. That team is falling apart.
I've said from day one, and everybody thinks I'm crazy, because this whole LeBron thing going home, overrated. LeBron is a different situation. The Wizards and Durant, right. I never saw that as a fit, ever.
Right. I saw a great point made about that. Look, if he loved Washington so much, why the hell didn't he sign with Georgetown? Why'd he go to Texas, of all places?
Exactly.
He had no connection there. For the 1 year he spent in college, he had no connection to the University of Texas, and he flew across the country to join a Longhorns team before bolting and going to the NBA. These players don't necessarily have to remain home. It's a great idea. Everybody loves it. But the reality is they can make their money anywhere. They want to be in a place that makes them feel most comfortable. It's all about comfort level for them, you know. And for LeBron, there were so many different narratives that he had to satisfy about bringing a championship to the land, about being able to rebuild his image, about gaining the acceptance of fans. Yeah. All the crap that came with his departure in 2014, he had to fix that. Going back to the decision in 2010, that was a completely different situation. Not every player is going to return home.
He did it because of marketing. I mean, look.
Right. Sure.
I think what – and it's funny we say this now too, because clearly in the last year and a half on the court, Cleveland's been better than Miami. But let's be really honest with ourselves. And let's – I'm not even talking as a homer here, because I give you straight talk with the Heat also too, okay? He made the wrong basketball decision, period. Based on what has played out in the last year and a half.
Wow.
Seriously. Would you ever hear in the first 2 years that Kevin Love and – Kevin Love has been rumored to be traded three or four times in the last year and a half. Okay? Now we got Kyrie apparently unhappy there, and it's been going on since last year. I mean, seriously, that never happened in Miami.
It's hard to say, you know. I mean, I agree with you. Look, they've certainly gone through their issues in Cleveland, and I hate the fact that we're even devoting as much time as we are to them. But, I mean, who knows what would have happened had he stayed. And we're not – you're not taking into consideration the – not necessarily bad blood, but all the negativity that did build up over the course of that 13-14 season. I mean, the fourth year of the Big Three era was a difficult one for everybody involved. The constant exposure, the constant scrutiny, the fact that they were pushing for a three-peat – all these things took their toll. Dwayne Wade's injuries, the trading of Joel Anthony, the waiving of Mike Miller, those things kind of build up over time, and they were really affecting him and the team overall. So who knows if he had stayed here in 2014, would Wade have had the bounce back season that he did last year? Would Chris Bosh have chosen more money elsewhere? I mean, who knows what would have happened? You know, look, the big free agency acquisition in 2014, other than Luol Deng, which would never have happened if we had re-signed LeBron James, was Josh McRoberts. And up till recently, he hasn't even been a factor.
Although we did hear too, and I tend to believe this, that had LeBron committed to stay in Miami, Pau Gasol would have followed.
That was the rumor, right? I mean,
it's a strong rumor because it's still being said today.
Well, you know, I think it was Dan Le Batard who said that LeBron James specifically was texting Pau Gasol during his meeting with Pat Riley and telling him, look, I'm not coming here, so look elsewhere, and that's why he chose Chicago. I mean, that's deliberate sabotage, but whatever. You know, it's been a year and a half. He's moved on. Cleveland's moved on, and so has Miami, I think, for the most part. So maybe we should do the same.
Oh, I've been moving on to LeBron, man. I'll be honest. People have asked me, I really feel this way. If he were to come back, if there's an opportunity for him to come back next year, and actually there is because he might opt out against his contract, I moved on. I don't really care to have LeBron on the downward here. I'd rather just build what we have now.
I don't know. I think you're definitely the minority on that.
Yeah, maybe I do miss LeBron. I miss the years, but I don't know. I'm burnt out. I think this whole thing yesterday with him coming down with Wade and working out with him, and I mean,
He certainly likes the spotlight and the drama and all that.
He's such a drama queen, and I've always known that. And I love LeBron, but come on, dude, Is it the Curry? Is it the Steph Curry attention?
Right, I did see that. That's funny you mentioned.
I think that's what it is. I get it, but like, come on, you know. But I will say this today. He has in his press and his media session today with the in Cleveland. You know, when he asked him about like, you know, whether you know, why it, would you understand if why people here would be a little uncomfortable with you working out with Dwayne Wade, a former teammate in Miami. And he said, I don't care. And I love the answer there because, you know what? I am sick and tired of passive-aggressive LeBron James. Just let it out there, man. Nobody's going to hate you any less, okay? You actually may get more fans that way. You know, part of the reason why people are annoyed by LeBron James is because of the fact that you are passive-aggressive. Just be real with it, man.
Right.
You know, you wanted Dave Black gone. You were a reason why Dave Black's gone. Don't BS us and say, oh, well, you know, they didn't let me know that morning. Not because it was in process for the last year. That's why. They didn't need to check with you. They knew you didn't want him there.
Last question. Is he still the best player in the league?
Right now?
Yeah.
When I have this discussion about LeBron and Curry and who's the best, I don't look about best player in the league. I look at it more about who's the most impactful player in the league right now. That's a better question. And I think Steph Curry is the most impactful player. I still think LeBron can do more with less than Steph can. Like, if I put LeBron James on the Sixers right now, they're a playoff team.
Sure.
They are. It's just that simple. That's how good he is.
No doubt.
You know, you put Steph Curry on Philly, are they a playoff team? I don't know. Got to think about that.
And
that's not knocking Steph Curry. It's just that the way LeBron is built, because he's 6'8", 260, he can do more with the basketball than Steph Curry can. That's all it is.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, it's a difficult debate and clearly one that's never going to take place, but it's an interesting question, I think. So.
Well, sir, what do you think? I mean, am I right there? Do you think I have a point there?
Yo, absolutely. As far as overall impact currently, Steph Curry is clearly the most impactful player. I was actually covering the game when he was in Orlando.
No, I text you. I text you from there.
Yeah, that's right. The 51-point outing. And I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, there's no point where he doesn't feel comfortable just rising up for a shot. Half-court shots have become the norm now. The fact that he's shooting at a higher percentage than a lot of players from the free throw line from 28 feet and then further. I mean, that's just kind of – these are kind of ridiculous statistics that, you know, there's no way to wrap your mind around them because there's – they just changed the way that you look at basketball historically, the way that we have for years, et cetera. So I think when you look at his overall impact, the way he's playing, it's just unbelievable. And for people who want to say he's just either the product of a good system, that's ridiculous. The fact that he's only a shooter, also ridiculous. He's a great – I wouldn't say great, but he's a solid defender. He's a great passer. He's got a hell of a handle, and he creates opportunities for his teammates. So, I mean, he's an overall playmaker, maybe not as – well-rounded in every aspect as LeBron is when he's engaged, because that's the biggest issue, I think, for LeBron. Even today, and I made that criticism of him when he was in Miami, lack of engagement. We'll probably see LeBron James the way that we've become accustomed to seeing him during the playoffs. But for now, during the regular season, at this particular point in time, at his age, he's coasting a little bit, and he's been doing that for years.
Yeah, I think last year in the playoffs, even though he's not efficient as he was in Miami,
sure.
Last year we did, you know, from, you know, not having Kyrie for half the playoffs, not having Kevin Love for most of the playoffs, and getting to within 2 wins of an NBA championship, I think speaks volumes how good that guy is still. It's just that simple. Before we go, though, I want to look at the schedule, because we probably won't be doing another podcast probably until next Thursday at least. And I said on the record that Miami this week is important for the Heat in terms of, you know, because the schedule is relatively... Well, let's go beyond relatively. It is cake for them. They should sweep this week and early next week, in terms of who they're playing. Okay, and obviously to me the hardest game really was Chicago on Tuesday, and they got through that with flying colors. They should win their next 5 games. If they lose one game, I understand because there's matchup issues there, but their next 5 games. Going into next Friday, which we'll probably have a podcast before then, but the next four games, really. They got Phoenix tonight at home. Phoenix is atrocious. You can argue right now they're worse than Philadelphia. Oh, by the way, Philadelphia on Friday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Home and home. I mean, There you go. And then I think next Wednesday the Bucks at Milwaukee, which is always a tough game. But yeah. I can take 3-1. I prefer 4-0. I mean, Miami did win in Milwaukee last time they played.
Right.
And now they have this new lineup, this new unit. Miami should be able to start separating themselves from the bottom of the East in terms of, when I say bottom, I don't mean bottom like New York Knicks bottom, who are trash, by the way. I'm talking about New York. I'm talking about bottom in terms of 5 through 8 in the East, because you still got Indiana hanging around. You still got a couple teams, Charlotte, and you know a couple teams, you know, Detroit, all that. That still a few games behind. There's still a little bit of a glut in that. 3 through, although I will say Boston separated themselves too a little bit as well, but 3 or 4 through 8 is still a little bit of a glut. Miami should be able to start separating themselves from the rest of the pack, at least in terms of being that top four conversation this week.
Yeah, 22 games left in the season. The way they're playing at right now, you know, you have to think that they'll have to at least win 15 of those 22 games. I mean, if they could pull out 17 through 20, that would probably be better for their overall chances, maybe overtaking Boston. That loss to Boston on Saturday, that's going to be one that's going to bite them.
Crushes, because number one, they lose season series, so they can't tie them, because then Boston wins the tiebreaker. And the reason why it's huge for me, too, huge for the Heat, in my opinion, that they lost that game, because I think the 3 seed or the 2 seed, but I don't think they get in Toronto, but the 2 or 3 seed is the path to the conference finals.
Yeah, I would say so. I think you look at, you know, whoever's going to be 5 through 8, I don't think they're going to provide much of a challenge for any of the 1 through 4 teams. I mean, you could argue that maybe Boston, given the fact that, you know, Isaiah Thomas is their top scorer, maybe they don't have a pure, quote-unquote, superstar on their roster. That might be a little bit more difficult. But the way they play defense, it showed last season that they can't compete at a high level, even, you know, challenging Cleveland as much as they did. And I think they would still be a little difficult out in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, I think Miami is definitely looking to play for that 3rd seed. I think that would be a big thing for them. You know, again, the return of Chris Bosh, if they're somehow able to get that 3rd seed, I like their chances of advancing to the East Finals, to be honest with you. So, and maybe even beyond that. But, yeah, the next few games should be a definite positive stretch there. Now, we've seen in the past that they've, you know, let down a little bit. I don't expect that to be the case. Philadelphia is really falling apart at this point. Phoenix, clearly. The Milwaukee game is going to be an interesting one, because Milwaukee, I think they still see themselves as a potential playoff team. And they've always created mismatch problems for Miami, at least in recent years. Yeah, there was a recent win there, or the most recent game that they played, Miami did win that. But the length of that team has been an issue. I think it's not necessarily going to be as much of an issue now that you can space the floor a little bit better with Joe Johnson and the way that Luol Deng is playing. I think it should be an advantage for Miami, but it's going to be an interesting test for them. It's arguably their toughest test over the next few games. Now, when we come back, you know, or when we do our next podcast after that, then they go to Chicago, and after that, Toronto on Saturday, March 12th. I mean, that's a back-to-back versus Chicago and then Toronto. That's going to be a very difficult one. I expect that Toronto game to be a tough one, but probably not one Miami could win.
Right, right. That Boston game was a killer last week, for a lot of reasons, obviously. And like I said, I think the 2-3 seed is the path to the conference finals. And I think it's, if not 6 or 7, because I think 4 or 5, you're playing Cleveland second round of the playoffs.
Right.
And I think Miami might be the best shot of beating Cleveland in the East. Honestly, based on experience and stuff. But if you're Miami, you want to avoid them as much as possible, as long as possible, and make that matchup happen in the conference finals as opposed to the second round of playoffs. So that's why I think the 2 or 3 is so important for the Heat right now, if not fall to 6 or 7. I'm not suggesting they fall to 6 or 7, obviously, because you don't want to risk missing the playoffs completely. But I do think that 2 or 3, and especially that 3 seed, is a very, very important priority for the Heat moving forward. And Boston right now is playing some great basketball. In my opinion, they have maybe the second or third best coach in basketball in Brad Stevens. I mean, what a phenomenal... You talk about coach of your candidates. I mean, obviously you have Steve Kerr / Luke Walton, and obviously Pop is doing great things in San Antonio, but my God. My God, Brad Stevens.
Yeah, he's doing some impressive things there. I think just his overall understanding of the game, his after-timeout plays... The way he's been able to get the most out of that lineup, where you could argue that, you know, there isn't a great player on that team, and yet they're still playing great as a team. And I think that's, again, if we talked about Spoelstra being able to maximize the most of the talent that he has available, the flexibility to get everybody motivated, those are the things that Stevens does as well or better than anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, he's certainly been a master at getting the most out of his team. And they're playing at a high level. They're committed to defense. And, you know, you look at their second, third best players. I mean, who do they have after Isaiah Thomas? Jay Crowder? Kelly Olynyk? Yeah. I mean, and Olynyk has been a great shooter from the outside. He's been hurt recently. But, I mean, Jared Sullinger? I mean, this guy was...
Jay Crowder?
Crowder, I'm a fan of Crowder's.
So, I love Crowder.
He's a good defender. He's a guy that Miami would like as well. I think
he'd be a Riley guy. He just said it. He'd be a Riley guy.
Yeah. But at the same time, they don't have much as far as star power is concerned. They're just playing very well as a team. And you know, that speaks volumes. Now, whether or not that translates into the playoffs, it did last year. Should it do it again this year? It'll be difficult to say. But for Miami, clearly advancing past Boston somehow, getting to the third seed, I think that's more likely, especially if Joe Johnson is able to continue playing at the level he has and if Miami is able to stay healthy. You know, we've seen a lot of great things from them. You know, I think a lot of fans are saying that pace is necessarily what's gotten to this point. I don't think Miami's necessarily playing at a better pace. I think it's just a continuation of their defensive intensity. You know, they're the fourth best in overall field goal percentage, seventh best in overall field goal percentage, but fourth best in 2-point field goal percentage. They're getting to the line a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know, their free throw rate over the last seven games after the All-Star break, a .306. So currently, overall, they're 11th at just .287, but they've been getting to the line more. They're converting at a higher rate because of the increased free throw percentage from Whiteside. So I think that's been the overall difference there. They're shooting better. They're shooting more. They're also shooting more free throws. So I think that's a big part for them as far as the recent improvement that we've seen. And I think that should be a part of it too. Now, can I ask you a question? Now, you've seen the game a lot. You know Joe Johnson pretty well. Did you expect him to be as adept as he is from, you know, within 2-point range? Because that floater game has been something that I didn't really expect from him before he came to Miami.
Oh, no, I'm not surprised. I think he's a very quality basketball player. I'm not surprised at his 2-point game and obviously his range. You know, I think the problem with the Joe Johnson narrative is that we judged him on the contract in Atlanta.
Oh, my God.
That's absolutely a problem. Let's remove that a second. First off, Joe Johnson is going to be a fringe Hall of Famer.
That's tough.
Seven-time All-Star. I'm not saying first ballot, though, but I'm saying he's a fringe Hall of Famer.
If Richmond gets in, I don't see why. If Richmond can get in, I don't see why Joe Johnson merits some consideration.
Seven-time All-Star. He's that stat where he's only one of three players ever to do, it was like 17-5, and some number I saw. I don't remember the actual stat, but it was him and Kobe Bryant and somebody else, another Hall of Famer, that career numbers average is something that they average that in that ballpark. I forgot the number. I had it on my notes like weeks ago and I forgot it. My point is, though, the Joe Johnson narrative is all based on a contract, and I get it. Yeah, he's way overpaid. His production is not worth a $25 million a year guy, but that's what the market was at the time, and that was what Atlanta needed to do to keep him. I get that. If you remove the numbers, Joe Johnson is one of the better players in this league.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I guess fans, especially Atlanta fans, would think, well, maybe he should have sacrificed and taken less money so that they could build a better roster.
No, you sacrifice and take less money, Atlanta fans, because come on, please. I love how fans, they marginalize these things as though they wouldn't do the same thing themselves.
Course.
Oh, no, boss. I don't need a raise. No big deal. I'll take less of the company.
Right.
Shut up. You ain't doing it. Stop it.
And you know, it's not like they didn't have a good roster. I mean, it's not Joe Johnson's fault that they invested their time and money in Josh Smith. You know, they did have Al Horford, who's going to be a quality free agent this summer as well. So it's not like they didn't have a great roster there over Joe Johnson's tenure. They had some problems there, and they just weren't able to advance.
They're a playoff team. They made the second round playoffs a couple times. I mean,
they beat Miami.
They were successful. I mean, sure. What do you really want more? I mean, I'll tell you what. The New York Knicks would rather be the Hawks the last 5-6 years.
Undoubtedly.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, the New York Knicks, who, by the way, is the most profitable or richest franchise in all of NBA.
Right. Well, that's a whole slew of different issues, though. The cable deal that happens to be owned by the team's owner, who happens to own the arena where all the concessions and everything else are made. It's a nice little system there where it keeps feeding itself, and they pocket everything that goes in.
Cluster bleep, it is.
Well, should we talk a little bit? I know that one of the things that you brought up was the navigating of the salary cap situation.
Ooh, and I should, well, this is also in tribute to my man Andy Ellsberg, because, you know, people, Heat fans, obviously, we worship Riley and we worship Spoelstra, some of you guys anyway. we worship Arison for, you know, being the greatest owner and ever and creative right. ever. And we forget there's still another guy that no one gives any love because he didn't say anything. Andy Ellsberg, the best capologist in the NBA. Oh, yeah, I said it because everybody else says it too. How he shed $11 million between last summer and now to get Joe Johnson and still get a luxury tax by waiving Beno Udrih a couple days ago, I think it's a testament to how well this front office, and when we talk about the Heat front office, about the success and the camaraderie and the stability, he's a big part of that. Not just Riley. Riley has said many times over, Ellsberg is his right hand man. He doesn't do what he does without Ellsberg.
Right.
He's the guy that crunches the numbers.
Right.
Not Riley. Him.
Yeah, you know, Riley's there. I won't say he's just there for a show. I mean, he's the face of the front office, if you will, the behind the scenes face. And yeah, exactly. And that's what he's great at. He's great at the words. He's great at, you know, meeting you one to one and pitching you on why Miami is the best option for you. But none of that happens without Ellsberg telling him, look, we can offer you this much and this is what you're going to get, et cetera. I think that the Beno Udrih situation is it's a very telling one, because I know there was a Brian Windhorst report that a lot of front offices were kind of pissed off at the way the deal had been navigated, because I guess Udrih and the front office kind of worked it out where he would be waived and he's going to be hurt for the rest of the season. He wasn't going to be able to play anyway. And so Miami was hoping that another team would be willing to pick him up and add him to their roster, maybe Philadelphia, so they could reach the salary cap floor, I think. But it didn't happen that way. But the fact that Udrih was willing to be waived by the Heat, I think a lot of people had been pissed off about it, but I just think it's good business. I don't see what the issue is. And maybe you could explain it to me a little bit better. But from where I'm sitting, the team's front office, you know, talked to Udrih. They explained what the situation was, and he was willing to make the deal. And I don't see why. He's getting paid. Maybe they told him that they would be able to re-sign him next year. He was a good fit for the few games that he was here in Miami, and I think it worked
deal.
Out.
Yep, it's a wink-wink deal. I mean, it is what it is, but, you know, teams getting mad, and yet if teams were in the same position, they do the same damn thing, too, if given the opportunity.
Sure. It's funny. That's the ludicrous part of it is that everybody, you know, again, the way that we are talking about fans being hypocritical for criticizing Johnson for taking less money, the fact that 29 other teams didn't think of it themselves isn't a reason to blame Miami. It's just them being ahead of the game, just another example of that. The fact that they have these kind of relationships.
Just being smarter than you.
Yeah. You know, the new general manager for the Brooklyn Nets, Sean Marks. Clearly, you know who he is from his tenure in Miami. But I heard a great podcast. I don't know if you had a chance to hear
Vertical?
It. Vertical? Yeah. Did you hear him talking to Adrian Wojnarowski?
I miss his interview, actually. I do have it on my you know, I'm a podcast whore. I have a podcast on here, but I missed the interviews. It's on my queue to listen to, though.
It's great. And the way that Marks, I'm confident that he is going to be able to turn around that franchise. If you had told me 2 weeks ago before I heard the podcast whether or not I felt the same way, I would have been completely in disagreement. But the vision that he has is so clear. And he's taken the precepts that he learned in San Antonio and in Miami. And he spoke about Popovich and Riley both in the same glowing terms. The things that he said about this franchise, the levels of communication, the openness, the frankness with which Riley has shown his players over the course of his tenure here in the Heat. That's what it's all about. You know, everything that we talk about the Godfather, we want to picture him being in the shadows, you know, cigarette smoke dangling in the air, et cetera.
Wait, he doesn't do that? That doesn't happen?
Not anymore, no. I think he quit a few years ago. But, you know, we all want to talk about him being some kind of dark lord and a deal with the devil, but the reality is he's just a very good human in the way he's interacted with his players. You know, and he's always had these lines of communication. Sean Marks specifically said that Riley would take pains to knowing his kids, Sean's kids, and the names of his kids, what they were doing, what their interests were. So he would ask about the minutiae, the day-to-day things. And that means a lot as a parent, as a person, when your boss is willing to take, you know, notice of those things and ask you about them and stay in touch and you know, communicate those things to you. And that means a lot. And the fact that he's able to establish this kind of connection with Udrih over just a few months of being here on a Miami roster, that just speaks volumes about Riley and the way he's been able to navigate his way with his players over the course of his tenure. I think it's just great. If other teams can't, it's because they're not able to. It's not because they shouldn't criticize him for being able to do something they're just not able to do because they haven't bothered to take advantage of it themselves.
Are you listening, Sacramento? The Kings should listen to this podcast and learn how to do things the right way. By the way, I'm already petitioning for a Andy Ellsberg statue in front of the AAA.
That'll be a good one. That's going to take up a little bit of space, though. He's a big man.
I know he is.
Okay. He's tall, too. He's tall.
It's okay.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm just saying he's very tall. I know he's a little wide as well, but he's very tall, surprisingly so. He was walking around Summer League, and he walked by Media Row there, and I got to tell you, he was big. I had no idea he was that tall.
She gets an autograph next time.
No.
He's worth it.
The only autograph I want from him is on a contract when they pay me on a 10-day. That's the only thing I want.
What are you going to do, Water Boy? What are you going to do?
Hey,
you have any game? You got game?
Oh hell yeah! You know, I can spot up from three. I can do it. I can. I've got all around game.
You try to tie with the Warriors then, not with the Heat. Oh, he do need shooters though. Yeah, see, you got a point there. I think we covered everything, right?
Absolutely.
Today on the podcast. Yes, it's the first podcast in a long, long time, man. Like I said, we had a lot of scheduling issues the last few months, but we are now back. Very happy to be back, man. I mean, Heat basketball, and I love when it's Heat basketball when it's good. Like, it started this podcast last year, it was a little bit of a depressing year last year because of all what went on between the season that was disappointing, obviously, 37-45, the Bosch health stuff, the 33 different starting lineups that Spoelstra had to maneuver right. Throughout the year. So we are... Oh, by the way, I want to also shout out to our old host, Haley Burns. She's not working with Utah Jazz now. You know that, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
She's doing some great things. I'm really, really proud of her, by the way. So yeah. That's why she's not here any longer, because she's doing some big things in Salt Lake City with the Utah Jazz as a social media host or something like that.
Yeah, I think she's a social media manager over there. But, yeah, it's great. I mean, hopefully you're not going to stop listening to the podcast just because she's no longer on it. I think we're going to continue.
If you need me to talk more like an Australian, I will do that. You know?
Don't. Please don't.
No?
Please
okay. Don't. Damn it.
Sorry.
Before you go, Dave, where can everybody find you?
Well, they can find me at DeverMill13 on Twitter. My writing is available at Hot Hot Hoops. I've also done some things for Hardwood Paroxysm and The Cauldron and today'sfastbreak.com. So they can find my writing pretty much everywhere.
Wow, you're busy.
I am.
Okay, I'm going to whore myself now. Find me on Twitter, of course, at EJChris7. I have my own podcast, too, also, guys. I have my own called The Earnest Speaking Podcast. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the whole nine. We talk sports, pop culture, TV, even politics now. Yes, we do that sometimes. More so the minutia. Not all the you know, I agree with this. I'm more about this, the, you know, what I think's going on. It's like I treat politics not like sports. It's fun for me now more than anything else. I'll take it seriously. Really don't. It's just fun for me. Yeah, you can find it there, of course. And you can find this podcast on iTunes. And on we'll have it on Stitcher Radio probably next couple of days. I'm working on that now. But yeah, we are back now, and hopefully you'll be back for episode number 21 next week, the weekly podcast. Thanks, guys. That was good, man.